Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview the third round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Japanese Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albus Daly and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. I smell strangely of WD-40 because I'd been to the workshop on the way back from the office today to get a seized wheel cylinder off of the rear brakes on the Jimny because that's also broken. But I have now got an engine to put in the midget, but the midget is locked in somebody else's shed at the other end of Bedfordshire. So it's all gone a bit Pete Tong. But anyway, I'm doing fine. Timo, how are you?
Curious to know if your life is just one endless tale of side quests and you're never actually going to get to the main part of the video game. I'm also just curious as to how this is only the third round of the Formula One season this year. You said third and I'm like, he's right, but how? I'm pretty good.
I was questioning when I said third. I was like, it feels like there's been more than three rounds, but there's certainly been enough news to fill more than three rounds.
It's like a boxing match where you're going, I know how long this can go on for, but how are we only here? It feels like the amount of damage that has been taken so far, we should be further on because this seems traumatic and abusive at this point.
Yeah, we've really been slugging this one out. Speaking of news, we ought to jump into it because they did it. They went and fucking did it. Nobody on the prediction said it was going to happen. So by proxy, I do win the point for this one because I was the only person that actually predicted they'd do it this season. Red Bull.
You're the only person who is as crazy as Red Bull, and that is not something to be happy about. That means you're as confident as Helmut Marko.
I'm not as crazy as them. I'm aware.
Differently crazy on the same level.
I'm aware of the lazy level of crazy they operate on. As a respected journalist in my field, I can observe but not partake, and that is what I accurately did with my
journalist.
Anyway, Red Bull swapped Yuki Tsunoda and Liam Lawson. The rumour came out early last week when Dutch journalist Erik van Haren reported that the decision had been made while on a midway stop on the flight home from China. Apparently it was all done in Dubai, weirdly enough. And word from there spread, and by Thursday morning, Red Bull were essentially sort of pressured into releasing the official announcement. Team and I already made our thoughts pretty clear on this in the post-China episode when this was all starting to emerge. So go back and listen to that. We did also clip it out, so you can go back and listen to the half an hour we spent talking about Red Bull. But Ellie Mae, importantly, what are your views on this swap and Red Bull's actions?
It's bullshit and short, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
That does sum up the half an hour pretty quickly.
I mean, yes, he underperformed in the past two races, but Australia had tricky weather conditions and he ultimately crashed out because Red Bull left him on slick tyres on a wet track, basically, and that caught out the most experienced of drivers when they were on the right tyre. China was then a completely different track to Australia. You know, things like tyre degradation were vastly different to Australia, so how do you expect a driver to learn how to handle the car in a space of two very different tracks? And also, there were other drivers, whether they moved to a different team or whether this was their first season in F1, who were given loads of hours driving old iterations of the team's car as a form of learning to understand how the current car works. And I don't know why Red Bull didn't do the same, especially when they've had struggles filling this second Red Bull seat. They ended Daniel Ricciardo's season early to put Liam in, and they chose to overlook Yuki, who's been in this sport for years. So you would think that they would put enough measures in place to make it work with Liam. Okay, you can argue, well, Red Bull didn't completely throw him into the deep end because they gave him a seat at Racing Bulls last year, but the two cars were so fundamentally different that they needed to kind of bridge that gap more than they did.
Yeah, you're essentially echoing a lot of what I said in our Red Bull episode and China review, to be honest. It's baffling that they didn't make a lot of the same decisions that other teams have made and that they've still apparently not learned from the past. God knows how many years at this point. This feels like the third cycle of drivers they're going through at this point since this all started back in the Alvaro Bordet kind of days, if you can remember that far back at this point. And I'll be interested to see how it goes, but I'm kind of surprised that they didn't wait until after Saudi Arabia, maybe, because like you say, Melbourne and Shanghai were brand new tracks for Liam, whereas Suzuka, Bahrain, and Saudi Arabia were all places he's had recent experience in. While not in F1 machinery, he's had at least experience there, and you'd be curious to know how really he would have got on. And then you've got five Grand Prix. It's still a lot short of the 12 that I think Gasly got in the Red Bull before he got bounced back, but it would have maybe helped to justify it a little bit more. And I think it's worth noting Vandergaard's comments and Verstappen and others' reaction to them afterwards, which I'm sure you two have seen already, but just in case anyone listening hasn't had, I'll just have a quick run through of it, because it was quite interesting, and I did find it somewhat amusing in a black humor kind of way that someone called them out essentially for it in such a public way that everyone seems a bit afraid to if they're at a certain point. And you could, if you get high enough on the F1 ladder, you can't say what you want to say in public, where and Guido either just didn't get that memo or just didn't care. And he said, "I'm getting a bit tired of all the comments that F1 is the toughest sport in terms of performances. And when you underdeliver, you've got to face the consequences. Yes, you've got to perform. Yes, the pressure is insane. But in my opinion, this comes closer to bullying or a panic move than actual high athlete achievements. They made a decision, fully aware, gave Liam two races only to crush his spirit. Don't forget the dedication, hard work, and success Liam has put in his career so far to achieve the level he is now. I remember my own blood, sweat, and tears, and that was to reach F1, let alone driving for an absolute top team. Yes, he underperformed the first two races, but if anyone's aware of that, it's himself." And we saw that as well in all of his kind of post-race comments and interviews. Perhaps he has suggested this himself. Yeah, we did. And if not, I wish him all the strength and courage to get to the grid in Japan, which he has obviously now done. And it's going to be very interesting to see how he gets on in that racing bulls. Trust yourself, get your head up, prove them wrong. Verstappen, Piastri, Gasly, and Hülkenberg all liked that post. And I found that intriguing because, again, it's not saying anything, but saying everything that you need to say at the same time. And I quite like social media for that ability and that it can give us.
I think the most telling one was the fact that Verstappen liked it. It was when I saw the post and I saw, you get like the little circle of the profile picture of people that have liked it, and I was like, is that the like
The Max
official one? Yeah, is
Verstappen.
that the Max Verstappen? And I went and looked at the likes, and it was, and I was like, that's really quite telling.
Max had been quite vocal in saying that Liam needed more time and a bit and more support to actually achieve anything in that car. I don't think there are many drivers that will be sort of outwardly spoken against or for this move, as it were. I think while a lot of the drivers are supportive to see Yuki Tsunoda finally get his chance, I don't think any of the drivers want this to have come at the expense of Liam Lawson. And there's a few interesting points about this because I don't know whether this is Red Bull sacrificing Yuki Tsunoda's career so they can try and give Liam a chance to rebuild and come back stronger, or if this is them done with Liam Lawson. But one of the interesting things about sort of that came out recently was Helmut Marko, the dilapidated, broken, delusional old man that he is, went on the record as saying that the reason they hadn't moved Yuki Tsunoda up earlier or put him into the seat from the start of the season was because of Adrian Newey. And this is a baffling sentence because it makes no sense and is complete revisionist history.
How is it baffling if it's Helmut Marko? You can't be surprised at this point that he's
Well, yeah,
saying
this is
something by definition baffling.
from a logical point of view, it makes very little sense. Probably in Helmut Marko's mind, somewhere in with the concoction of Alzheimer's drugs, it makes a great deal of sense to him. He says this all stems from Mexico last year. So an important thing to know by Mexico last year was that Adrian Newey had pretty much already left Red Bull and was not at the races. He was not on the pit wall. He was not a part of their technical decisions across race weekends. If you remember back in Mexico, Yuki Tsunoda was clattered into by Pierre Gasly in a sort of three into one does not go style incident going into turn one on lap one. Debris everywhere. Some of that debris lodged into the floor of Max Verstappen's car, and Adrian Newey was furious about this and blamed Yuki Tsunoda. This is the story according to Helmut Marko. I'm like, but one, it wasn't Yuki's fault. Two, Max shouldn't have driven over the debris. Three, Adrian Newey wasn't even at that race weekend and had nothing to do with the F1 side of Red Bull operations at that point. So his opinion isn't relevant. So it's baffling. And that was the thing. This was also the same weekend where Liam Lawson flipped off Sergio Perez. But for some reason, that bit gets overlooked in the decision making. So there's a lot of baffling choices that have been made through this entire process. And I think Red Bull have tried to go back and sort of patch a few holes here and there. But the problem is, it's if anything, doubling down on admitting they've made a mistake without actually saying we might have made a mistake here by
Well,
promoting.
the other thing that they said was that they're now wanting Yuki because he knows how to develop a car and that's of great interest to them, which is obviously a lie because if they were, they'd have put him in the car from the start, wouldn't they? Instead of putting in a rookie, or at least given the rookie time in the car, like Mason, like I said about Antonelli and Mercedes, you let him practice in all the old cars as much as you can so you get a feel for it so you can develop it from the start. You don't just lob him in there and see what happens. But happily, this does give me. As my final thing to say on this matter, because again, I don't know how we've ended up speaking so long about this again, is that if you want another prediction for your prediction sheet, Mr. Billington, I say as a result of all of this, Verstappen will now retire after baby Verstappen is born, going, I've had enough of this. This is getting silly now. So Red Bull will then have to reconsider re-promoting Lawson or promoting Hadjar or either Rouasso or Lindblad or Goethe or Marty. And one of the latter two will wake up, find themselves in the racing board seat, wondering how on earth they got there.
So you're saying that Maxwell retires after baby is born and then someone replaces them. I do have written in pencil for you also, Lindblad replaces Hadjar at halfway. I will apply
This
that
could all work.
to the Red Bull. Lindblad would be the ideal next spot, or possibly Omar Rouasso.
If all this works, I get a lot of points on a really left field prediction, and I'm laughing, and I don't need to get anything else right this year.
I'll give it to you.
And as well, wasn't the reason that they didn't have Yuki in the Red Bull seat was because he was apparently too inconsistent?
Yes.
That too, yes.
But
I was
just
certainly
really
interested that
happens
Helmut
to
Marko did
your
say
faces.
he's performing the time of his life at the moment. I thought, sure, qualifying. We had this whole discussion after China, like qualifying, he does great. Grand Prix, you can't really say that just yet, and for whatever reason. But you look at the results, you can't say he's performing at the time of his life when you just look at last year and go. There you could say it, but this year you can't quite say that just yet because, like you said, I mean, it's only been two Grand Prix. You
Also,
can't say that about anyone yet.
VCarb have consistently dropped the ball at both Grand Prix when it comes to strategy.
Well,
We
that's
don't
what I'm saying. Regardless of the reason
know their
for it, it's
strategy in
kind
the
of you
past.
can't then say, oh, but despite that, that's not how that works.
Yeah, I think this is a lot of Red Bull revisionist history. But to avoid this becoming the Red Bull podcast, once again, we will move on to Alpine, who have got Ryo Hirakawa stepping in for Jack Doohan this weekend in an FP1 session. He drove for McLaren in Abu Dhabi last year, tested for Haas previously. He won Le Mans in 2022, two WEC titles to his name. He's a very sound driver and clearly on loan from Alpine to from McLaren to Alpine for this testing. But it does beg the question, at a circuit that Jack hasn't raced at before, why are you taking him out of an FP1 seat? At least do that to Gasly?
It's very interesting that they're doing it so early on in the season as well.
Well, on the one hand, I can see it's a great thing for Rio to drive in F1 machinery at his home Grand Prix. I'm sure there's some central sponsorship money coming in to help Alpine along on that one. On that side of things, totally understand it. On the other hand, another excuse for the higher-ups to try and justify canning Doohan if and when the time comes, if he doesn't perform in Suzuka. Which he's already going to be on the back foot for, as you mentioned, Amy, because he's not raced here recently. He'd last raced at this circuit in 2019, but that was in F3 Asia. So very different machinery. And like 2019, a while ago. So yeah, it seems again, it's this whole thing of let's just focus on this aspect in terms of if he doesn't perform, oh, he's not performing. And let's just not focus on all the actual facts surrounding the context for this and why this is still such an annoying situation. And you'd think, seeing how Red Bull have handled their whole situation, maybe learn from that and don't fall into the exact same trap that says, I'm a trap on it. Just an idea.
Maybe they're setting them up to fail because Alpine.
It's interesting. I'd like to know why Flavio Briatore has got such a vendetta against Jack Doohan, I guess.
Maybe he's still angry that he couldn't get Carlos Sainz at Alpine last year, and so he's just blaming Jack Doohan for it, and there's no logic for it at all.
Maybe he doesn't like Australians. Has Flavio Briatore dated an Australian?
Where's Heidi? Oh no, she's Germany.
Yeah,
She's
German.
German.
As soon as you got the first name, never mind the second name, you're like, I'm not German, straight away.
Any reasons that
Also, I
he
don't think we can do this based on women he's dated. I mean, there is a certain logic, but I don't think
It's
Flavio has
Flavio
enough outlets for that
Briatore.
sort of thing.
We're never going to get
I'd
over
look into his
Flavio.
business deals more than his girlfriend in terms of has any Australian screwed him over money-wise.
Football bits
That
made
where
by the
his
IRA.
child he has nothing to do with was conceived.
Naomi Campbell.
You do like bringing that up when there's an opportunity, don't you?
Right.
No, doesn't look like there's any history of him having dated Australians. So very strange that he doesn't seem to like Jack Durham. But
You
anyway,
can cut up a whole bit.
we can, or we'll leave it in. It was very short, especially compared to the Red Bull section. Meanwhile, when it comes to testing, Bottas is testing for McLaren now. The Mercedes reserve driver, test driver, third driver, gin connoisseur, professional TikToker has been put on loan to the Woking outfit. The Finn will test for the papaya outfit at Barcelona to get to grips with the car, to familiarize himself with the team in case he needs to stand in for either Norris or Piastri this season. So again, good that they're keeping him useful. And I guess McLaren's contract with Mercedes for engines seems to obviously also extend to drivers. It's not wholly uncommon. And again, it's a powertrain he's used to, just gives him a chance to get to grips with the chassis and away he goes, I suppose.
I don't want to see him in papaya alongside Piastri for a Grand Prix this season. Just be fun to see that as a kind of there's a crazy race situation. I don't know. It just appendix seems to be the fashionable thing these days for F1 drivers. So if that was going to come along or something else, then it'd be interesting. But yeah, otherwise, I'm not fussed about seeing Bottas back properly in F1 anytime soon. So if it's just a one-off in a good car like a McLaren, I'd be intrigued to see how it went.
Yeah.
But that's all I'm interested in.
Two Australians in a car named after a Kiwi. I mean, it's great for people from that corner of the world as well.
That's what I was literally about to say. I was going to say that it's Flavio Briatore's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Two Australians doing well in a car named.
That's when you play the Jaws music.
Yeah, that's when you see the very sort of lion-haired man sharking towards you in the paddock with a look like thunder. Anyway, final piece of news is that Sophia Flörsch has parted way with HMD in Indy Next. The split comes with word that budgetary issues are behind the change. Sophia's season in the sport covers just one race with a P12 finish. So hopefully she finds something else to jump into. Possibly Freca, maybe GT, WEC, IMSA. There'll be something for her, but there was a little bit of irony for the person who spoke out so violently against F1 Academy that she's had to go and find seats elsewhere with very little success. But we'll see what happens.
Well, I can understand why she did, to be honest, because at that point she didn't have to go back in time, and it's something that other drivers in F1 Academy W Series have spoken out against in public and in private, saying it's frustrating that we have to go through the same hoops and over and over again. We'd love to be able to try it out elsewhere, but we've not been able to because of budget. So I don't fault her for trying to get into other racing categories and going back into F3 and trying here. It's a shame the money's not there. You'd think that with the kind of increase in opportunities and sponsorship deals that have come out about in the last years for the women in motorsport, that there'd be more money behind it. But it is where it is, and it's equally frustrating because she did pretty well so far in the season. I know we only had the P12 finish, but in testing she finished sixth overall, was fifth amongst the full-time drivers, and was less than half a second behind what is now championship leader and former teammate Dennis Hauger. So she was also a hundredth of a second ahead of other teammate Kyle Collett, who was Rookie of the Year last year and obviously did some decent performances in Formula 3, I want to say. So she was up there, and it would have been interesting to see how she would have done for at least a few more races. We seem to be having drivers who deserve more of a chance on performance basis getting cut way too soon, and I don't know where she turns up next. I know Jamie Chadwick's just about to make her European Le Mans Series debut this weekend in Barcelona. Obviously, you've got Ian Dames there as well. But it's this awkward part of the season where you'd maybe get to jump in for a round or two somewhere. I don't know. I mean, Super Formula wouldn't be a bad idea either if there's room there with anyone, just as a sense of it's a step up from F3, it's a step up from F1 Academy. It's maybe around the same level of Indy NXT, but very frustrating.
Problem is we're already two
Well,
rounds.
yeah, but I'm saying this is what you do. You jump in for a round or two, like you can see with several other drivers in other categories over the course of the year. I'm saying it's already difficult, but it'd be nice to see her get the opportunity because I don't get where she's not being able to get money from. She's very marketable. She does very well with the social media side of things, and it's almost a driver that doesn't need results in some ways to get the budget for where she wants to go. Now that she does have the results or the promise of results, she's ironically loses the money, and you kind of go, what do you have to do?
It does open up a lot of questions. I will say, though, on the topic of Super Formula this season, favorite boy of the podcast, Omu Iwasa, currently leading the standings there, 30 points ahead. Choto
Second
being,
or third place finish.
yeah, doing very nice.
Also, for note, just while we're on there, Kamui Kobayashi's racing in there. Yes, that one. Zach O'Sullivan's still alive. That's where he's gone off to. And Juju Noda, who we're going to be keeping an eye on, is competing there as well.
Yes, yeah, if you there are a couple of interesting names in there. Tomoki Nojiri as well is an interesting one coming through and has a lot of promise as well. I think they've pole position on both races, so you just need to get some race formatting down for them. But yeah, there's a lot of promise. It's always such a fun series to watch because they are properly quick little cars as well. It's a shame they aren't the support race for the Japanese Grand Prix, but
Yeah, they just had Suzuka, so
yeah,
a
they
week
just
too soon.
they sort of open and close at Suzuka, I think. Yeah, so yeah, they're off to Motegi next, which is always a great little circuit. Anyway, that's the news out of the way. We'll move into, ideally, sort of streamlining our way into some Japan fun facts.
Have some if we would like them.
Go on, treat us.
Would you like to know how many laps Fernando Alonso has raced around Suzuka alone in his lengthy F1 career?
Top 400 races.
Just at Suzuka, he's not done 400 races in Suzuka.
No. I'm just trying to work. How many seasons has he done? He's done what, 20?
Yeah, but it wasn't always Suzuka, was it?
No, there was a couple of years where it was
Fuji.
Fuji, yeah.
And he wasn't always there. And he didn't always finish.
Let's call it 12
Anyway, would you like
Grand
a guess
Prix at
whilst
400.
Jesse still tries to figure out the
420.
Oh. No. Yeah. I was going
Is that
higher than
higher or lower than what you were going to go for?
that. I was going higher.
Take your bets now. Going three, going two, going one, giving amber.
720.
A lot closer, 840 laps, and that is just in Grand Prix. That's not including qualifying or practice or nothing. So he's done a lot of racing around there in that time. Verstappen and Hamilton, the only other two Japanese Grand Prix winners currently on the grid. Schumacher is the most successful driver, while McLaren is the most successful team, 6 and 9 victories respectively. Leclerc's going to start his 150th Grand Prix here, obviously his first being in Australia back in 2018 with Sauber. One of the first races in Suzuka was a sports car Grand Prix won by Peter Waugh, who was driving a Lotus 23. He later returned as the boss of the Lotus F1 team. And only two Japanese drivers have been on the podium at the home Grand Prix. You don't get points for Kamui Kobayashi for driving for Sauber in 2012 because that's obvious, but can you name the other driver the year or and or the team?
Oh.
And I'll miss Elf. Get it out of the way now. Obviously, Takuma Sato doesn't count either because, well, he was on the podium for the Honda that was in the US in 2004, which is famously known for not being Japan, amongst other things. Are you Googling
Maybe.
Ellie May?
Other Japanese driver to have got on the podium at their home race. I can't have Takuma Sato, no. Kamui Kobayashi already disallowed
Did
because
it, but that's the obvious
oh.
answer because I hope we all remember that.
I'm trying to think of another Japanese driver in Formula One, and the only one I can
It's
think
not Taki
of. Yeah, Taki Inoue was the only one, other one I could think of, but I was like, he almost certainly did not have a
Inu.
successful, he never had a successful Grand Prix
He
weekend.
might have been on the podium, but it wasn't during a race. That
No.
might have just been a
Did
visit.
you happen to get your fun fact from motorsport.com?
I did not actually, no. But it's nice to see them doing some excellent work. Do you want me to put you out of your misery?
Please, just in
It
general.
was Aguri Suzuki in the Espoo Lotus F1 team back in the 1990 Japanese Grand Prix.
Agree, Suzuki, of
So there
course.
we have it.
I
Those are
choose.
my Japanese fun facts. Come back next year for some more, by which time I shall hopefully have some because I think I used quite a few of them this year and maybe should have left a few for next year.
Maybe there'll be a new Japanese driver on the podium, but we'll get to that in a minute.
I don't think Iwasa's racing this weekend in Formula One.
No, but he might have to step up to the V card. We'll wait and see.
Poor Hadjo.
Maybe. Of course, special liveries this weekend, though, importantly. Haas, lovely blossom livery. Pinks, whites blended nicely with their existing style. Very tasteful. The Red Bull has also got a special livery. So for Tsunoda's first weekend, he's running a resurfaced circuit at his home Grand Prix in a notoriously difficult car to drive that will be running a special livery. It's all against him, really, this weekend. But the Honda has gone back to white. The Red Bull has gone back to Honda white. There's a great promo shot of it next to the RA272, a car which I've seen Yuki Tsunoda drive. It sounds incredible. I'm sort of torn between the two special liveries. They're both quite nice.
I'm not torn at all. I much prefer the Haas. I think the white works well on the old Honda, but it only works on that one. It kind of looks a bit bland, I think. For me, I know you two like the Racing Bulls one. I didn't like that one either. So I feel like they've just planted that one on the Red Bull. Whereas with Haas, I'm going, you've got the white, but then you've added a nice splash of pink. And I wish that was your constant livery because I think it was Mahindra in Formula E when they went to Tokyo a few seasons ago that had decent homage to this, but it didn't work as well as this one does. And I don't, as long as it's not for crashing purposes, I want to see as much Haas on TV as possible this weekend, purely for that. And I
Maybe.
think they missed a trick in their opening promo of it by not putting the music from You Only Live Twice over the footage of the car reveal, because that would have been mwah.
That or the music from Initial D, that would have
Godzilla.
been pretty good. Yeah, I like the Red Bull. It's good. I think what they're actually doing is distracting us from the fact that what they're doing is slowly swapping the V carb into the RB. So that way, if they're both cars are white on one weekend and then all of a sudden it goes back to the other way around, you sort of won't notice they've made the change. It's sort of like a disguise. But I think the Haas just looks absolutely stunning and it's good. They've been out today doing promotional bits with Toyota Gazoo. They've been out on a rally stage with a GR Yaris, and there's some great footage of Aokamatsu absolutely wheeling this little GR Yaris on a gravel stage around. And man can properly shift. He's doing well and having a grand old time doing it.
I think the Red Bull will get lost if it rains in the mist. You won't be able to see it.
And the Mercedes.
Yeah, anything grey is going to vanish if we get a bit of rain and a bit of spray, which we might get because we do have a wholly resurfaced track this weekend too. So while it will be a grippier surface, it does come very much at the expense of tyres. We're going to see huge degradation rates. Turn 9 now also has a double kerb, so floor damage is possibly uprated through there, something for the Ferraris to be wary of. And gravel traps are now in place around turns 2, 7, 9, 14, and 17. So strictly enforced track limits there. If you get it wrong, you're going to go slower, you're going to end up in the gravel. Not good. But otherwise, it's lining up for an interesting weekend, especially that resurfaced track. It's going to be a demanding one for teams that can't sort out their tyres. Which brings us neatly to our predictions. And we start off with pole position. Pole position, your pole position prediction, please, Ellie May.
Nice.
Lando Norris. Timo.
Next for Stappen.
I'm going to go for the other Red Bull. Yuki Tsunoda. Oh, it feels nice to say that.
You don't want points this year, do you?
No, but it does feel nice to say the other Red Bull, Yuki Tsunoda. And like, oh yeah, that's got a bit of a ring to it.
How long do we give him, by the way? We haven't decided.
Well, two races.
He's got two races to beat, so I assume just this one.
No. It's going to be two races. Then it's Hadjar's turn. Then it's two races. Then it's going to be probably a Wasser's turn.
Agiles.
Then it's
Oh, he
two
was, sorry.
races. Then we go to who's the kid in Formula 2 now? What's his name?
Lindblad.
Lindblad. Then it's going to be two races. Then Chloe Chambers, I guess, from
We'll get to her by the end of the
Alpine.
year, you know, about right for doing two to a driver.
Yeah.
Bring back Daniel Ricciardo. I know it.
No,
I'd love it.
we find just any other Red Bull athlete. Like we go and find like Scotty
Not
Jones.
Carlos Sainz Senior.
Yeah, any other athlete that's sponsored by Red
Tisha
Bull.
Buffoni. She can
Yeah.
skateboard. She can race in Porsches. She can do a Red Bull car. Why not?
Exactly.
Oh, Scottie James just got gold at the.
Games Snowboarding World Cup or something. He does a great shoey on the podium. He kicks off his snowboarding boot and drinks his prize champagne from it. It's good. And Daniel Ricciardo is there, sort of like a supportive parent, and it's nice. It's nice seeing him happy. Podium position predictions. Ellie May, we'll start with you.
Norris win, Charles Leclerc in second, Verstappen in third.
Interesting. Timo.
Oscar Piastri win. George Russell second, because I forgot about him when I was thinking about this, and that was rude. And also, he's been doing quietly well, so this would make sense for him to somehow get second. And then Charles Leclerc in third.
Okay. And for me, Yuki Tsunoda win, Isaac Hadjar second, Esteban Ocon third. We'll see what happens.
I'd prefer
if Red Bull were on the podium, to be honest, because it makes my life easier making the graphics. They're the content pool, and it's much easier for me to find a photo.
This will be where it's Max Verstappen and Liam Lawson. I'm just to screw with and Oliver Benn as a kind of a counter.
The wrong half.
Yeah, I wish if you'd made that sooner, I'd have maybe changed my wild prediction just to be that instead. But I'll stick with my wild prediction when we get to it.
Fastest lap. Obviously, Formula One doesn't give out points for it, but we still do. Ellie Mae.
Charles Leclerc.
Timo.
Lewis Hamilton.
And for me, I think Max Verstappen. We're going to see a late pit
Your
stop.
one serious prediction of the evening.
I don't know. My wild prediction is relatively serious for a wild prediction. Ellie Mae, yours first, though.
Tsunoda scores more points than Verstappen and Racing Bulls combined.
I love this for only the reason that it would be amusing if he comes in P10 and the other three DNF will just have a terrible weekend. And you still get a point for it, so it's the least impressive way of achieving it.
Technically, though, if all three of them DNF and he's still in the race, surely he's
But he's
kind
not got a
of.
point, though.
There's more of a chance that he's going to be in the points, but it doesn't guarantee it.
No, he still needs to score a point. Even if the other three DNF, he still needs to score that point. So you've sort of given yourself two tiers of authentication here, but it'll be exciting to see if it comes out. Timo, your
Awesome.
ballsy. Timo, your wild prediction.
Double Alpine points, I want to manifest some positivity for them, and it would just be so nice. I think they've had two Grand Prix now where it's just been bad luck, and I don't know what to do with this team, because I've suddenly started liking Gasly a bit more than I used to, and I'm obviously a Jack Doohan fan, but then if they do well, Flavio gets credit, and I don't know if I like that. And but then Alpine's a big organization, and they have good people behind the scenes, but then Oliver Oakes hasn't been too nice to Jack Doohan either, so I'm just confused. But double Alpine points.
Interesting stuff indeed. And for me, I'm going to go double Williams points. We've got points on the board at Grove, but I think I'd like to see a really concerted effort from them this weekend to actually be in the points at
Is
the Grand Prix.
this a wild prediction? We had double points last time for them, you know?
Yeah, but they sort of lucked into it a bit. It did rely on like three
Oh,
DNFs.
okay. So can we put a little asterisk next to this then? They have to get it has to be
Yeah, they have to
genuinely
finish
achieved. If they
really
can't
well.
luck into it in Japan,
Yeah,
if they
this is
luck
what I'm saying.
into it, then it doesn't count for you.
They technically didn't luck into it though, because there are three illegal cars.
They didn't know that. It's not like
I
they
see your point anyway.
strategized having Carlos Sainz finish like 12th and then get promoted
You
up.
don't know that he's a master strategist.
This is very true. He did do the strategy for them in Australia. Look, I think for me, Williams will finish. They will cross the finish line. The checkered flag will be flown in front of them, and both their cars will be P10 or higher.
Well, they can't have both cars P10, so yeah, by logic.
There we go. So that just secures my statement. Thank you.
Just doesn't guarantee you points.
No, not particularly. It makes it harder. It keeps it a wild prediction and keeps the game fair. I can't make it too easy for you guys this year. Anyway, that brings us to the end of our preview podcast for the Japanese Grand Prix. Remember, it's another early starter for people here in the UK, and probably even worse if you're somewhere else.
Elsewhere.
That's all we've got time for. And of course, we will be back with a review of the Japanese Grand Prix on Monday evening, is when we record it. It'll be out on Tuesday following the Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can the listeners find you if they want some of your, as always, amazing work?
I shall be covering the Japanese Grand Prix for Everything F1, which does mean guess who's going to be a silly sod and up at all times of the night again? But hey, it's me. But if you want content that is available at any time, including normal times of the day, I have got a brand new interview out over on Instagram with Italian driver and co-driver pairing Giulia Bico and Maria Paola Iorio. So go give that a read.
Lovely stuff. Ellie Mae, if you can be found or would like to be found, where might you be found?
On the hunt for some cardboard.
We
Okay.
shall leave it there.
If anyone's got cardboard they can give to Ellie Mae, go for it. And if you want more of me, you can find me in Classic Car Weekly. Pick up the latest issue. Give it a read. The hell have we even got in this week's issue? I can't remember. That's it. We've got the latest update on my racing mini, which is heading to Goodwood members meeting, and a few other important bits and pieces hither and thither. Otherwise, also give a listen to the good Classic Car Weekly podcast and check out our video content as well. We do that now. So that's all good fun. Or I'll be in my workshop if you actually want to find me in person. Anyway, that's all we've got time for. We'll be back with a review of the Japanese Grand Prix.